Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, is it a case of justice or injustice? A black teenager found dead wrapped inside a high school gym mat in Georgia. Department of Justice says there will be no charges in the case. We will talk to attorney involved in the case as well. Also, folks, the U.S. Senate proves they are an all talk, no action when it comes to guns. We'll hear from Senator Cory Booker as he responds to the Senate rejecting four gun control bills following the deadly shooting at a gay Orlando nightclub. Donald Trump, he just loves the blacks, but the blacks don't love him. He fires his campaign manager. Data shows that 88% of blacks say we ain't feeling Trump, but he also says if he had been an educated black man, life would have been so well for him. School discipline goes overboard while black preschool students being suspended at such an alarming rate, almost four times more than white preschoolers. We'll look at the startling stats right here on News One Now. Also, a new book lists more than 100 reasons women should date multiple men at the same time.
No.
Tiffany Lofton says no. I'll talk with the author. News One Now starts right now. Folks, shocking news out of Georgia. The Department of Justice says they are not going to file charges in the death of Kendrick Johnson. He is a young black kid found dead inside of a mat in a high school. They say he climbed into the mat to retrieve a gym shoe. Are you serious? After the ruling, the Department of Justice released this statement in part. After extensive investigation into this tragic event, federal investigators determined that there is insufficient evidence to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that someone or some group of people willfully violated Kendrick Johnson's civil rights or committed any other prosecutorial federal crime. Accordingly, the investigation into this incident has been closed without the filing of federal criminal charges. Though local and state investigators ruled Johnson's death a freak accident, his parents, Kenneth and Jackie Johnson, have always believed their son was murdered. The Johnson family filed a $100 million wrongful death suit shortly after their son's death, but it was withdrawn earlier this year. Joining us via Skype is the public safety reporter from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Christian Boone. And of course, joining me on the panel today in D.C., Tiffany Lofton, former USSA president, also a campaign strategist, Paris Jannard, GOP communications strategist, George Jefferson Newry, founding CEO in the Public Eye Communications, Dr. Wilma Leon, political scientist, Sirius XM radio show host. You've been covering this case, Christian, and I'm still perplexed as to how they determine that he somehow died trying to get a gym shoe.
Well, if you think of the gym mat as stacked vertically, and he used to share a pair of shoes with another student, a lot of the kids would leave their shoes underneath the mats. The theory is that he was in a rush to get to class, and instead of moving the mat as he normally did, he was on a bleacher sort of coming over and reached under and sort of got him sort of swallowed up, if you will, into the mat.
Well, what also jumps out at me, which is troubling, is that video was missing. How you had these camera angles that showed what was happening in the gym, but when it was time for the portion of the tape to see him in the mat, video goes blank.
Yes, I understand the video was motion detected, so I mean it was dependent on, you know, movement. I know it was the video was analyzed at the Quantico during the federal investigation, but yeah, no one's seen the actual, except for I think FBI agents have actually seen every bit of footage that they have.
Reaction from the parents has certainly not been accepting of this DOJ ruling.
No, not at all. And, you know, I think that really the DOJ here has got some, or the U.S. Attorney's Office has some responsibility, because I believe that they, I think the parents were led to believe that there would be something coming. And, you know, when they got the word yesterday that there was nothing, I think they were run for a loop.
I'm going to go to our panel here, Wilmer. This case has bothered people for a long time. Athlete here, very much into shape. Climbing into a mat to get a shoe when he could have pushed the mat over to get the shoe.
This is the Zapruder film. This is the magic bullet. This makes absolutely no sense. And when you look at how tightly wound into the mat the body is, logic just tells us he was rolled into the mat by other people to hide the body.
Because if that mat, if he had come across the top and come into that mat, the force of his body as the mat moved over would have opened up. I think the Justice Department, since there is no statute of limitation on murder, should leave this case open. I think there's a missing shoe, there's a missing piece here that will unfold as time goes by. Just say, we don't know what's going on, we're gonna leave it open, and we're gonna keep investigating this, because there's no way at the weight of that young man's body was that so tightly rolled when it fell over. And what killed him when it fell over? He's in a mat.
And it would probably unroll once it fell over.
Right, exactly.
Well, Christian, the other problem that we had is that at the outset, the medical examiner and the sheriff's department were not as willing to help with, so there was a lot of drama there as well in terms of how they behaved.
Right. There was some questions some back and forth between actually the medical examiner, the local medical examiner, and the sheriff's office about how that was handled, which raised, I think, additional questions for people who thought that this was a, mysterious death in the first place.
Paris.
I think the thing that's unfortunate here is that the family still doesn't have a full sense of closure. They don't have closure in the sense they don't know really what happened to their son. They don't have closure in the sense that they don't know really what happened in terms of who did this. And so there's a sense of injustice that still is pervasive. And then the community and his peers and his friends who may go to the same school might be thinking, well, could this happen to me? And what would happen from a legal standpoint, what happened from the school standpoint, if I got into the same situation with this type of scenario of inconclusive results happen, and then would the DOJ not come to our rescue? So it's an unfortunate situation all across the board.
Roland, I think the justice is supposed to tell the truth. And so now we have parents who are hearing back from legal authorities that we're sorry for the loss of your son, but we are unable to tell you what happened to him. I don't have any kids, I've said this before on the show, but every time we have a situation like this,
right,
we also hear every single time that they can't tell us the truth.
Yep.
Sandra Bland, Freddie Gray, now Kendrick Johnson, and there are several stories after time, where we're supposed to unpack and know
right
what happened. You said the video piece is missing and all those other things. It's unfortunate, but we have to figure out in this country, how do we continue to put a special emphasis on Black lives to make sure we're actually able to hear what happened to those folks?
All right, Christian, we sure appreciate it. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Folks, more trouble in the Donald Trump campaign as the Republican nominee cleans house. He fires his longtime campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski. The firing comes in the wake of sagging poll numbers and lukewarm support within the GOP. Also, this is the same campaign manager who was spotted yanking a man by the collar at a rally back in March, and also almost pushing down a reporter who's trying to ask Donald Trump a question. Lewandowski was charged with simple battery, but the charges were later dropped. At the time, Trump backed the campaign manager. Now Lewandowski says he will continue to support his former boss.
I think, what has been clear from the get-go that my strategy has been, and at some level was successful, is let Trump be Trump. And you've got a person who has completely changed the way that politics is viewed in this country for the better.
Folks, so he's still going to support him. Also, Trump has some other issues because if you look at a recent poll, based on reporting in the Washington Post, African-Americans and others absolutely are not supporting Trump. His unfavorable ratings among African-Americans is 88%. 88%, 87% among Hispanics. And so you got lots of drama right there. Look at that, 88% unfavorable, 9% favorable. Not only that, folks, Donald Trump's disregard for African-Americans, nothing new. Check this out. Mother Jones found this. This was NBC did a piece on race in America. Donald Trump said if only I were an educated black man.
A well-educated black has a tremendous advantage over a well-educated white in terms of the job market. And I think sometimes a black may think that they don't really have the advantage or this or that, but in actuality, today, currently, it's a great, I've said on occasion, even about myself, if I were starting off today, I would love to be a well-educated black because I really believe they do have an actual advantage today.
Can I go first?
A well-educated black. Okay. Also, anyway, Paris.
You're a well-educated black.
I am a well-educated black. I went to Pepperdine.
He wants to be you.
What, Roland? What?
That's your nominee.
That is our nominee.
That's the guy you say you're going to vote for.
I am going to vote for him.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Shocking. So... If only he were an educated black.
I thought you were a well-educated black.
I am. Well, listen, I think, well, I've said this multiple times, he's not the most articulate candidate that we ever had. But, he's well-educated. He's a well-educated white. But I think that at the end of the day, what he said was not, I don't think we should be offended by it. Because he was just purely pointing out that from his perspective back in the 80s, that blacks that are educated have an advantage.
And he said they might. And that was a damn lie.
And he said they may not realize
and
it.
And that was a damn lie. Hold up.
From his perspective.
Hold up, I'm sorry. An educated black wouldn't realize they had an advantage? Well, hell, that might mean they're not educated.
No, I just think that it's about perception.
No, this is...
It's about the perception...
No.
About the perception that black people have.
No,
The perception that a white had.
That was the anti-affirmative action argument.
Exactly. Right.
And very thinly and poorly veiled. And the other thing is, with Donald Trump, this just shows us historically, he's been the purveyor of idiocy and inaccuracy for a very long time, because the wealth disparity numbers don't show that highly educated blacks do well.
Also, the numbers of the employment data show that an African American with a college degree, you still had double the unemployment rate of whites with a college degree.
Intra-business data shows that black doctors don't make as much as white doctors. Black PhDs don't make as much as white PhDs.
You're from California, aren't you?
I am.
What happened when they got rid of affirmative action as related to blacks getting enrolled into California schools?
Numbers drastically dropped.
Exactly. And so my point is that, yes, because of affirmative action, there was an advantage to black students getting into colleges, because when they took away affirmative action, our enrollment numbers went down.
But if we're talking about...
That was an advantage to whites getting into college when it's called legacy.
I'm not disputing that. I'm not disputing that.
So getting into school, that would be pre-educated. So that data doesn't... Why do Republicans continue to go for data that doesn't make any sense?
I think that it is time, with all due respect and my love for you, Paris, it is time for your...
Here comes the dig.
There is a dig. Right. And it's a big dig.
It's a lot of love.
Yeah, it's a lot of love. But I love you. I'll give you a Band-Aid. But I think it's time for your party and those who support Mr. Trump to stop making excuses that he's not a racist when the words keep coming out of his mouth that says, I'm a racist. Every single word around this, if I had an advantage, I would be an educated black. Donald Trump is who he is because he had access to capital. Right. That is education, non-education.
Trump, who he is because he had a rich daddy.
Well, that's access to capital. That's access to capital. And so black people can get to a point where we are very educated. We can compete on a test.
And
we can compete in the room, and we cannot have access to that capital.
This is the same guy who spoke in Las Vegas over the weekend when he said, we're going to improve this economy for us and the African Americans. Are we not
us? Us and the African Americans.
Well, it's separated.
See,
right. Or black.
And here's the other thing.
Hold up, Paris.
I think he was referring to.
Are we not in us?
We are in us, but I think he was just talking about us as white people and African Americans.
Well, why
not black.
Is it two us's?
Well, us as white people. But if he said us as white people, that means African Americans were not included in us.
Because African Americans aren't white.
But he didn't say white. He said us.
That was because I would assume he was talking to a white audience or a primarily white audience.
But it could have been that.
Well,
he could have had his African American in the audience.
Well, I'm glad there was one. There's two if I was there.
If he's that inarticulate, how can America stand to have a president that is as inarticulate, if that's what we want to call this, as Donald Trump? You can't sit across from Vladimir Putin and say,
and
on Monday, and then call him on Wednesday and say, oh, my bad, you misunderstood what I said, Mr. Putin. Why is it
he's never said he misunderstood.
Well, we keep hearing
When it came to guns and bars, he had to come back. That's not really what I meant.
Too much of walking stuff back. Why is it that we can't take Donald Trump
at his word?
Tiffany.
Roland, here's the issue.
We need our interpreters for Donald Trump.
Right.
We need a little bit more than that. We just need him to go and disappear somewhere. Yesterday, the Washington Post came out with an article that showed us the data from the primaries and the caucuses that just took place and how they voted. We saw in that data, which I posted to my Facebook and Twitter last night, check it out, that Donald Trump is actually succeeding more than Hillary Clinton right now in the young voter population. So if you're telling us that 88%, he has a disapproval rating of 88%, in the black community, 87 disproportional rate with Hispanics, then that means young white people in this country are also helping to determine what the results are going to be in November. And that's scary and fearful, not because we're just uneducated in the country, but because Donald Trump has not presented any agenda items, anything.
All right, folks, hold tight. 1 second, we come back. We'll deal with a bill to block Harriet Tubman being on the $20 bill from Congressman Steve King, your Republican buddy from Iowa. Okay, Paris, also, drama in the Democratic Party in Virginia prevent a black lieutenant governor candidate from speaking at the state convention. Now they're apologizing. Is it too little too late? Also, in the United States Senate, guns, four measures voted down yesterday, including allowing folks on the terror list to buy guns. Way to go, GOP. All of that next on News 1 Now TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, big trouble brewing in Oakland, California. They've had three police chiefs in 9 days. No, seriously. The department continues to deal with scandals involving race and sex with a minor. Paul Figueroa, shown there on the far right, served only 2 days as the city's police chief. He announced Friday he's taking a leave and will return as captain. Sources say he resigned because he did not want intense scrutiny on his personal life. He was supposed to replace Ben Farrell, pictured in the middle. Farrell held the position for 5 days. His removal reportedly stemmed from an extramarital affair. He was supposed to place Sean Wendt on the far left, who retired for personal reasons, but many believe his departure was due to his mishandling of a sex scandal. That sex scandal reportedly involves more than a dozen officers who accused of having sex with a teenage prostitute. There are reportedly text messages showing a few of the officers giving the prostitute a heads up about sting operations to avoid getting arrested. Then there's this other small controversy over racist text messages. Black officers in the department reportedly exchanged messages using the N-word and one image spread showing a picture of a KKK member on a cereal box. The mayor is now trying to clean house.
As the mayor of Oakland, I am here to run a police department, not a frat house. I feel that this is an appropriate time to place civilian oversight over this police department and to send a very clear message about how serious we are of not tolerating misconduct, unethical behavior, and to root out what is clearly a toxic macho culture.
Police department has been under scrutiny from the Department of Justice, and that scrutiny continues. Let's now go to Virginia, where there's drama surrounding the Democratic Party. At the center of all is Justin Fairfax, a candidate for lieutenant governor for 2017. The former prosecutor asked for a speaking slot at the state's Democratic convention on Saturday, but he was denied. As word spread about the cold shoulder, people are expressing their outrage on Twitter. NFC East Hawkins tweeted, "I'm concerned why I declare Virginia lieutenant governor candidate is allegedly not going to be able to address Democratic Party Virginia convention. But the party executive director, Becca Slutsky, responded to an article in the Virginia Pilot saying, quote, "It's disappointing that he is seeking to divide our party at a time when there's so much at stake with Donald Trump at the top of the ticket. Mr. Fairfax's campaign brought concerns to our attention only 24 hours before DPVA's convention weekend began with the expectation that we accommodate him in a solidified speaking program. It simply was not possible this late in the game." Now, joining us right now is Justin Fairfax. And Justin, you give him money to the party.
Yes.
You bought a table there?
Absolutely.
Spent other money?
That's right. Spent other money. And we're very supportive of the party. And Roland, first of all, thank you for having me on your show. We've done a lot in the Democratic Party, both in the Commonwealth of Virginia and nationally. As you know, I ran for statewide office in 2013 for Attorney General of Virginia.
Lost by, 5,000 votes?
A little under 5,000 votes. We won nearly 49% of the statewide vote in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I was 34 years old at the time of that election. We also were endorsed by the Washington Post that cited our agile and impressive command of the issues. So I went on to endorse the ticket, including Mark Herring, who's now the Attorney General and worked for them, traveled the state. I co-chaired Mark Warner's Senate reelection campaign in 2014. And so we have been, you know, incredibly engaged with the party, tremendously supportive of the party financially and otherwise, as you mentioned. And I've traveled literally tens of thousands of miles around the Commonwealth of Virginia to fight for Democrats. And so we wanted to bring that message to the state party convention this past Saturday. And when we made the request, as you mentioned, we not only were denied the opportunity to speak, but also there were some words used that we thought were frankly inappropriate, saying I was seeking to divide the party simply by asking for an opportunity to address the folks who came to the convention. And so there's been a massive backlash against this online, and people have really stood up and said, this is not the kind of rhetoric that we want to hear, not the kind of treatment that we want to see.
Now, also, let me interrupt you there.
Please,
also, so someone who has not declared but is considering running, she was allowed to speak?
That's what happened. And there's someone who's exploring a run. And so there was a lot of conversation about that online. People were very concerned about that. And again, all I was looking for at that point was an equal opportunity to speak. And it probably would have been, you know, just several minutes to address the convention. And I'll tell you, Roland, it was disappointing. It really was. But at the end of the day, the message I was going to deliver there, I'm getting to deliver here. And that really is the message that we've carried forward, which is focusing on creating more economic security and opportunity for all of our families. Roland, you know a lot about my story. I literally grew up 2 miles from here, up North Capitol Street, Northeast Washington, D.C., in the mid-1980s. Raised primarily by a single mother. I have a great dad, but raised primarily by my single mother and my grandparents. It was a tough time, mid-1980s, gangs, guns, drugs. But because folks gave me that kind of opportunity, gave me education. I went to Duke University, Columbia Law School, Columbia Law Review, became a federal prosecutor because people gave me security and opportunity. And that's really why I'm in public service. And that's what I'm fighting for.
I want to go to my iPad here. This was a statement released yesterday. Justin Fairfax has a promising future and is a rising star in Virginia. We found ourselves in a difficult position with his last minute request to speak at our annual fundraiser, and we aren't able to accommodate him. In fact, we did not have any of our congressional challengers speak who are running this year with a big weekend coming upon us, poor wording was used. His request should not have been called divisive, and we apologize for that. We have reached out to invite him to meet with the chair for a one-on-one meeting to determine how we can move forward together. That's Emily Bolton, Communications Director, Democratic Party for Virginia. Yeah. I'm still trying to understand, though, if you have a state convention, how would you not have candidates who are declared running as Democrats not speak?
Right, and I really is the concern that we had and that others had, and frankly, I'm the only declared lieutenant governor candidate, and so you would think at a state convention, you would have the only declared lieutenant governor candidate come speak, particularly one who won nearly 49% of the vote in the last go around in a statewide primary. And so that really was a big concern for us. And what I hope, I was happy to hear that the party issued a formal apology,
right,
about the way that they handled this and the words that were used. They have reached out to sit down, and I look forward to doing that in the coming weeks to discuss ways that we can move forward. But my hope is that we don't have to approach anything like this again, that there won't be future attacks, that we can be positive. Rolla, you know me. I always engage positively. I'm about bringing people together and making sure that we're moving forward on the issues that really matter for our families.
All right, Justin, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Roland. Thank you for having
me. All right, folks, in D.C. yesterday, when it came to guns, guess what ended up happening? Four bills came before the Senate. All failed, including one that had a waiting period for anybody who was on the terror list. Members failed to approve what many are calling four common sense gun control laws yesterday following last week's Orlando nightclub massacre where 49 folks were killed. The proposals were designed to keep terrorists from getting firearms and improve the current process on background checks. We talked with New Jersey Senator Cory Booker last night via Skype. Here's what he had to say.
I still believe the power of the people is greater than the people in power, that these handful of Republicans in Congress can't stand against the rising consciousness of our country that really wants their churches and their mosques and their playgrounds and their schools to be safe. And while you have terrorists who are literally preaching to others, exploit this loophole, telling lone wolves, go out and get guns. Don't come here anymore to Syria. Do your damage right there in the United States of America, where it's so easy to get guns. So we cannot allow ourselves to have an environment that is aiding and abetting terrorists from doing this harm. And I think that we're going to see more and more pushing for something to happen. And the Republicans who are trying to block this are going to have to respond, or their candidates are going to get hurt at the poll. I can't read the hearts and minds of all my colleagues, but one thing I do know is one of the big blocks is the NRA. And that they have such power down in Washington, D.C., even though they give money, but not that much money, and they have membership, but not a membership that's greater than all the people in this country who really believe passionately that we should close this loophole. In fact, studies show, polling shows that over 70% of NRA members feel like we should close this terrorist loophole. If we are not as active and engaged in calling our senators, insisting that they do something, I don't think anything's going to change unless people feel the heat and the pressure. In the short term, the bipartisan conversations are continuing. In fact, as we speak right now, there are conversations going on to see if we can at least, maybe we're not going to make ourselves close this loophole all the way, but can we close it a little bit? Can we gain a little bit of ground as a result? So I think that that's going to be explored right now. Focusing on the terrorists, closing these loopholes, universal background checks will not only stop those bad folks and evil folks from getting guns, but it'll stop spousal abusers. It'll stop criminals. It'll stop murderers, people that we have already deemed not that should not get their hands on weapons. It'll help stop them from getting weapons as well. And I just want to say thank you, Roland, for always focusing on important issues and being a voice within our community of not only just sanity, frankly, but of ideas that are going to move our country forward. So thank you.
Let's go to our panel. Bottom line is Senate did nothing.
Yeah, well, I think it's important for the viewers to know that this was not just a Republican thing. There were four total bills. Republicans issued two measures. Democrats issued two measures. This is a failure on a bipartisan failure. Both sides failed to come together and promote some bipartisan legislation that would work.
Prepare us every single time.
I'm sorry,
this
it was 50,
not
the
another.
Votes were like 53-47,
they were close.
And that was along party lines.
That's my point. They failed on party lines. There was not a bipartisan agreement. There was not bipartisan efforts to work together to bring forth some legislation after this Orlando attack. It wasn't just because when the Republican bills came up, the Democrats didn't support them.
Let's
talk a little history here. My turn to talk. It took almost a year after Brady was shot in the Reagan assassination attempt for anybody to even think about the guns. There has been a concerted effort by the Republican Party not to rein in our guns, and this is why. That terror watch list has all of the Islamic people we're talking about, but it has far more people who are white and are militias and are white supremacists are on that list. That is why they don't want to limit guns to the people on that list.
Well,
it's unfair for those people to be on the list, and they don't get to decide who's on the list.
Wilmer, in fact, for 15 years, Republicans have prevented the CDC from even doing any studies on guns in this country.
Yes.
because that, the NRA doesn't like it.
And if you look at the difference between what the Republicans proposed and what the Democrats proposed, the Republicans proposed yesterday basically nothing. All they wanted to do was extend the waiting time 2 or 3 days. But the Democrats are also at fault here because they have not consistently been championing this issue. They have been afraid for the last few years to pick up this gun control issue because they saw it as a loser. Now that we have the conflict that we have in Orlando, the problem we have in Orlando, now they want, and just one quick point about the watch list.
Real quick.
I am on the watch list, and the list is crap.
Tiffany, real quick here. What jumps out also is that NRA said, you vote for it, we're going to target you. These politicians are afraid to lose their seat. They are afraid to fight the NRA.
And let's talk about the strategy for that really fast. If Congress members are afraid to lose their seat, and so they don't pass bipartisan legislation, they don't pass legislation to stop the killings that have been happening. The last time I was on your show, we were talking about over 180 mass shootings in this country. That means that the people need to respond by casting their vote to make sure that they kick those folks out of office. And I know that sounds really cliche. I've been a huge voting rights supporter just in general, but they also have passed voting rights to prevent our folks from even going to the ballot in the first place. The money talks, and this is all speaking truth to power. Our people need to turn out not only for this election, but make sure that this stuff does not continue to happen.
Coming up, we'll talk about what's happening in schools as it relates to, of course, kids, black kids being disciplined, suspended far more than whites. Also, what if your job offer you a big buyout? Should you take a lump sum payment or spread it out? Deborah Owens will break it down for us as well. All of that next. News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Closing arguments were made in the trial of former Baltimore cop Cesar Goodson yesterday. He is one of 6 officers on trial for the death of 25-year-old Freddie Gray in April of 2015. He faces 6 charges, including manslaughter and second-degree depraved heart murder. Goodson was driving the arrest vehicle when Gray's neck was broken during the ride in which Gray was not buckled in his seat. He died a week later due to the injuries. The prosecution contends that Goodson breached his administrative duties to keep Gray safe, but the defense says there's no evidence to show that he neglected to do his job. The judge will deliver a verdict on Thursday. Jury is trying to decide the fate of Philadelphia Congressman Shaka Fatah. Continue their deliberations this morning. On Friday, a judge dismissed a juror in the month-long racketeering case. It's not clear what led to the dismissal. An alternate replaced the juror, and deliberations continue. Fatah is accused of orchestrating a scheme where 2 of his staffers used money from federal grants and nonprofits to pay back an illegal loan. Fatah's lawyers say he was clueless about the scheme. The 59-year-old is charged with racketeering, bribery, money laundering, and honest services fraud. He's been in Congress since 1995. Folks, we've talked about this whole issue of criminal justice reform on this show on many occasions. Now more attention is being paid to the school-to-prison pipeline. Policies that treat African-American students like criminals just for being black contribute to them not being invested in their own education. And so our students are receiving significant punishment for simple things like being fidgety or agitated or even flipping a pencil. A new study by the U.S. Department of Education says that black students are suspended or expelled almost 4 times as much as white students, and it starts as early as preschool. While only 18% of African-American students are enrolled in our nation's preschools, black students account for 48% of all suspensions. White students, who make up 43% of preschools, represent only 26% of suspensions. Joining us right now is Assistant Professor of Psychology at Winston-Salem State University, Dr. Dawn Henderson. She has been studying this troubling trend. Dawn, what does this really come down to? Is it a matter of teachers simply saying, I don't want to deal with any kind of issue in my class, just kick them out, that way it's not my problem?
So thank you, Ron. I think that it's a number of issues, particularly if I think about our research over the past sort of 5 years. looking at the experiences of suspended students. So yes, we do find that some of this is about teachers' sort of frustration with the students' behavior in the classroom. But what I want to make clear, especially here in the state of North Carolina, is that teachers just are the referring agents. The individuals who make the decision to suspend the young child is usually the assistant principal. So the assistant principals use a discretion, their own discretion. They also consider other mitigating factors, such as prior suspension, attendance, and different things like that to go ahead and refer the young child to suspension. So I think teachers are just the crux of the issue. We know that there are other issues in the public school system that are influencing the decision to suspend young children.
One thing also I think that's important here is that there seems to simply be this attitude of, I don't want to deal with the problem. You said teachers are referring, but that still is the issue. Look, I can recall in school, teacher said, I got this. But all of a sudden, it is as if it's like, hey, I don't even want to deal with it. So let somebody else. So a kid gets passed on and on and on.
Yes. That is very much so. And I say that teachers are the crux of the issue because I think some of this is a reflection of what I call racist ideologies, right? And specifically, when you understand that teachers, not just teachers, but assistant principals, school resource officers, have a perception around young children, and specifically young children of color, young children who grow up in certain neighborhoods, and that perception influences the way they evaluate their behavior. So again, they may have more tolerance concerning one child, but less tolerance concerning another. And again, when they have that lower levels of tolerance, they're more likely to say, you know, we want this particular child out of our school. And that is what is happening in our public school systems here in the United States.
I want to go to our panel here. Tiffany, we have, first of all, a year or two ago, Arnie Duncan, and who was then Secretary of Education, mm-hmm. as well as Attorney General Eric Holder, mm-hmm. Both made an announcement talking about this whole issue of suspensions and how, yeah, it begins in preschool, and these kids are set up from the beginning as, oh, you're a discipline problem.
Right. No, absolutely. And we talk about the school to prison pipeline. There is an unpacking conversation, I think, that we still have not tackled yet. The support around the teachers, you know my history, Roland. I've been in Jackson, Mississippi. I've been all over the country, but I remember specifically being in Jackson, Mississippi, and speaking to teachers in the classroom who were doing a K through 12, who were talking about, we just don't have the support in the classroom or in the school to be able to refer these children, to be able to refer these students. Parents are also saying the school does not have enough infrastructure, financial support. And so I think when we talk about the issue of teachers or talk about the issues of the classroom with discipline, let's focus on what type of resources and support does the state and the community provide for those schools to be able to be successful. And those rates are clear. Data speaks truth. But let's make sure that we also focus on resources for our institutions.
Parrish.
Back in 2000, President George W. Bush talked about the soft bigotry of low expectation. Now in 2016, we're dealing with the overt bigotry of overpunishment. The issue is this education system and the education issues are so interconnected between criminal justice reform, the economy, and jobs that we've got to do something about it immediately.
Yep. Wilmer?
Is it Dr. Henderson? Is that her?
Yeah.
Dawn, yes.
Does her data show anything about the rate of children who drop out of high school based upon how early in their process they are starting to be suspended? Because I've seen studies that show correlations between students that if they're suspended by the fifth grade, they drop out of high school.
Dawn, real quick.
Right. So I think that that's a really good question. And I think, unfortunately, even when I think about the data that has been released, that many of these studies are correlations, right? That we know that there's a correlation between the number of suspensions and involvement in the juvenile justice system, or the number of suspensions and the student's propensity to drop out. However, again, because we know that there are other factors that are influencing that decision, I think that there's still kind of room for research to really understand that direct relationship. And I don't think that we're there yet.
All right, then. Doc, I so appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
All right, y'all, coming up in Wealthy You, we'll take a look at pension buyouts and decide which option might be best for you. Deborah Owens is up next. Also, I'll talk with the author of a new book that says dating just one man at a time is a wrong way to find Mr. Right. All of that next on News 1 Now TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Who could possibly block Harriet Tubman from appearing on the $20 bill? Well, Iowa Republican Congressman Steve King. As part of a larger Treasury funding bill, the Republican has introduced an amendment to bar the Treasury Department from spending any money to change the images on paper or coin money. That would include current plans to replace the image of President Andrew Jackson on the front of the $20 bill with that of Harriet Tubman, a staunch abolitionist and suffrage rights advocate. The Treasury Department announced the plans 2 months ago. At the time, Donald Trump came out against the change. Now it looks like he has some company with Steve King. So we're going to try to see if we can get Steve King on the show to see if he'll come talk to black people. That'll be interesting. All right, y'all, speaking of money, it's time for Wealthy You. In today's unpredictable economy, many companies are offering their employees buyouts as a way to shrink the size of their pension plans, which ultimately reduce the company's financial obligations. So if you're offered a buyout, should you take the lump sum payment now, or should you hold on to their pension plan? Here's America's Wealth Coach, Deborah Owens. Deborah, when my dad worked for Amtrak, they had a choice, take a lump sum payment or do furlough. Well, he chose to take the furlough, so he got paid for 7 years.
Exactly. And here's what
sounds like a good idea to me.
Yeah, a perfect idea. And this is what I tell people. If it sounds too good to be true, it usually is. And what you want to do, though, is look at what is that monthly benefit for life. So just so our viewers know, you've vested in company plans as you change jobs. You have the company has a pension obligation to you to pay you at retirement. What companies continue to do is to shift this burden from the company to the individual, offering you a lump sum payment prior to retirement. So it looks good on the surface, but the first thing you need to do is look at the numbers. So in crunching the numbers, look at the benefit for life. So it may be that they say, oh, we'll give you $300 for a month for the rest of your life. Now that may not sound like a lot of money, but crunch the numbers. Should you take like a $12,000 lump payment versus a $300 monthly payment? The fact is that if you, in 10 years, that's $36,000, where they're offering you $12,000 today. So at the end of the day, you want to look at, okay, what is that lifetime benefit versus what is the lump sum going to be? And the other thing, too, is so many people are not prepared now to even manage those funds. What you have right now are retirees mm-hmm. who are trying to create an income stream. And with rates as low as they are, 1% at a bank, it's very difficult. So oftentimes what I tell people to do is to do a cost-benefit analysis. Okay, what's the money you're giving me right now versus what the monthly benefit I'm going to get?
One of the things that happens, though, people see that large number, and that's what just attracts their attention.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, I'm not saying don't take the lump sum benefit. Let's say if you're younger, you're in your 40s, and someone's going to give you $30,000 today versus a $200 monthly benefit now, then you've got, 20, 25 years to make that money work. The problem is that people are, number one, not knowledgeable enough to invest those dollars, right. And number two, what's happening, particularly to African Americans, is we're seeing this leakage as it relates to retirement plans. Aon and Aereo did a study mm-hmm. on 401k plans, the color of money. And one of the things that they see is with African American funds in particular, they're seeing that leakage. And so that's why there's such a wide gap in terms of how much African Americans have saved for retirement versus their white counterparts.
Joy, real quick.
And Deborah, what do African Americans spend that money on? You're saying that there's a difference, there's that leakage. And what is the study saying we're spending the money on? If you get that lump sum, where are we putting it?
Well, typically, we in this new financial normal, as I like to call it, most folks are using it to for expenses. Sometimes you're unemployed. Sometimes you're underemployed. So for African Americans, what we're having to do is to use those funds
survival.
To live on. But I do think oftentimes what happens is we go for the quick fix, right? And as a because we know we have that lump sum of money, as opposed to using that as a last resort, we'll use that as the first resort. And so I think what we have to do is look for any opportunity we can to make sure that we keep that money working. Otherwise, it's not going to be allowed to compound so that we have that nest egg at retirement.
Yeah, if you give me $30,000, I'm paying off my student loan today.
Yeah, but that's...
And then it's gone.
And then it's gone.
You
and
get $30,000, you trying to hop on a plane somewhere.
But that's...
Put a little bit of change. Uh-huh,
yeah. Yeah.
But that's my point, right?
All right. More details go to...
DeborahOwens.com/NewsOneNow.
All right, then. We appreciate it, Deborah. Thanks so much. All right, folks. A new book says monogamy is killing your love life. I'll talk with the author of the book, Date Girl, 143 Reasons Why I Believe Women Should Date Multiple Men. That's next. News One Now, TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, ladies, when you're shopping around for a new car, shoes, or clothes, you give yourself options. So should that apply to your dating life? That's what my next guest says. She's the author of the book, Date Girl, 143 Reasons Why I Believe Women Should Date Multiple Men. Stacey J. Johnson joins us right now. Okay, so... what's the advantage?
Well, I can tell you from most of my life, when I, from actually my first date to probably about 5 years ago, I would meet a guy, we'd go out five times, and guess what? I'm your girlfriend. That's as simple as it was. You didn't have to do anything to deserve me. I would just, I'm a Southern girl, so I would just assume the position of doing what girlfriends do. And what I found is that I wasn't getting to know the person, I wasn't becoming their friend. We would like to say, women, what do we like to say? Men don't want to work for us. I disagree. I believe they do. They absolutely want to work, but we don't give them the opportunity to because we give over ourselves too quickly. The premise of my book is single women give their most precious gift, monogamy, to men who have yet to show themselves deserving. So the only thing I'm saying, ladies, is wait until he shows himself deserving of you.
But here's the deal, though. But you're saying date multiple men, but listening to you, having male friends, that's a different deal. I mean, I think if you go out with a group of folks, if you have male friends or even female friends, the folks who you may hang with, go somewhere with, is that necessarily a date? Or are you necessarily dating that person?
No, I'm not talking about going out on group dates. I'm talking about you meet a guy. I meet a guy. We go out. And
yeah, because I ain't meeting a guy.
I know. I hope not.
That ain't,
oh, you're
that ain't happening.
Okay, so
another show. Ever.
So we go out on a date, one-on-one. I'm not talking about group dating. I'm talking about one-on-one dates. Usually I would go out about five or six times, and then everything that a girlfriend did, I'm assuming the position. Now, women, we have to remember, though, that I'm not talking about having sex with these guys. I'm not talking about being intimate at all. When you're multiple dating, you're not intimate with anyone until you decide who you want to give yourself to.
I think Tiffany's trying to get in on this conversation.
Okay, so just really fast,
yes.
Let's unpack what dating means. Because obviously there's different definitions of dating for different
people.
And when I think, I'm single.
Hey, Tiffany.
And so, I've been single for a while.
Yeah.
And so when I think of dating, if a guy is courting you, we think logistics, because I'm 27. Mm-hmm. I'm like, is he paying for the meal? Is he picking me up? Is he dropping me off? Is he opening my door? And if you're dating different people, it's a different time. I agree. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad you said that. Let's not be intimate with them.
Oh, absolutely.
Doesn't always happen, because we live life. But what does dating mean in that sense? And how should I group somebody into a date category?
Dating is if you go to dinner. You're going to the movies. You may be going to a play. You might be going to the theater. You might be, honestly, gosh, you may be over to his house for dinner. I'm not saying, ladies, that you can't date. We're dating. You're going out on traditional dates. Mm-hmm. But I think that what we do is, point and tell, I was in a relationship with someone. This is before I was multiple dating.
Okay.
I was in the relationship with him 2 years. I knew probably 6 months in that this was not the guy for me. But guess what? I called girlfriends and I said, girl,
I don't think, and she's like, girl, he ain't that bad. Stick around. And what I did was I knew it was wrong, but because I was fearful and I didn't want to start over because I put in so much work.
That's how I feel.
I know, girl, that's why you got to date multiple men. You cannot be feeling like that, Tiffany.
Do you tell them that you're multiple dating?
Absolutely. That's one of the rules. You have to. You can't lie. You can't start anything good off in life.
Tell them.
Well, no. You have to be honest. You have to be honest because you want them to be honest to you.
Okay, I don't know if I'm okay with him dating other people.
But you should be because...
Wait a minute.
Tiffany,
breaks down.
No. You have to... You have to be okay with that.
I think that's where it breaks down because men generally are dating multiple people until they've made a decision. The woman has said, stop, he's my boyfriend. He, whether he tells you or not, I'm telling you, whether he tells you or not, he's checking out other places until he's made a decision. He may be intimate with other people until he makes the decision. I thoroughly agree with the book.
Thank you.
I thoroughly agree with your premise. I think women all too often decide what I need in life is a boyfriend,
yes,
as opposed to looking for the man who is going to be my partner
and
building a life.
And then what we do is when we're on these dates, we're in the result of the date. We're looking at him going, ooh, girl, he's fine. He's tall. He can get kids. He this, he's that.
Yes.
Instead of saying, how was his conversation? How is he responding to me?
Right.
How was he responding to
the world?
To the world. Instead of, ooh, wow, he has nice eyes, or most girls, ooh, he's tall. He makes
okay, and what you said, what
and what's yeah. sad about
I
it is,
so.
What's sad about this, as women, we have become corporate heads.
You got 10
seconds. We have corporate heads. We're running the world, but in our personal lives, we're still a little 1950s housewife.
Exactly.
I agree. I just don't want my man sleeping with other people, because that's what
he's not
also
your man.
Oh, no, he's
oh,
not
you're
your
right.
man.
You're right.
Okay, y'all,
right.
y'all yeah, because I also ain't y'all show. So I'm going to a break right now. News 1 Now on TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, y'all, the book is called Date Girl, 143 Reasons Why I Believe Women Should Date Multiple Men by Stacey J. Johnson. Stacey, you literally have 20 seconds. And so give your final word.
First of all, ladies, if you're dating, date. Don't live in the result. I always say, appreciate the man you're sitting across from. And let me tell you this, if you date multiple men, guess what? You will find the one. Now they say, well, if you play the lottery, we'll...
Okay.
What?
So 20 seconds up.
Get my book.
We gotta go.
On my website.
We gotta go. Tomorrow,
me.
We'll discuss Flint,
yes.
Michigan. News 1 Now on TV 1. Holla. I said 20 seconds.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number 2, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.